You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You're listening to Stage Door Podcast, the podcast celebrating theatre and creativity, from onstage mishaps to career-defining moments.
Hosted by thespians myself, Tori, and co-host Eliza, fortnightly we will bring you industry professional guests, deep dives, and more. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Stage Door Podcast. Before we get started, I would like to acknowledge that I am on Gadigal land.
And I am on Turrbal land, the traditional custodians of the land on which we work, live and record, and we recognise that sovereignty was never ceded. Almitra is a Sydney-based Persian-Pakistani performing artist, writer, composer, and independent producer. She holds a bachelor's degree in music, musical theatre, from the Australian Institute of Music. Almitra's theatre credits include Fiddler on the Roof with Willoughby Theatre Company and Kinky Boots with Pacman Productions. She was also part of the feminist comedy show Tough Titties as a featured musical artist.
She has also composed and written music for various projects, including the Breaths in Between with 11 O'Clock Theatre, and is currently developing her own musical, Alia. Almitra premiered her autobiographical show Blacklisted at the Hayes Theatre, which addresses the urgent and important issues of displacement of home, racial profiling, and immigration. She is passionate about representation on stage and screen for marginalised communities and is an advocate for epilepsy. Almitra hopes that her stories will resonate with audiences and leave a lasting impact beyond the theatre. Please welcome to the mic, Almitra.
Hello! Wow, what a long bio.
It's a fantastic bio. You've done so many incredible things. I mean, we actually know Almitra because we all studied together at the Australian Institute of Music. So it's so fantastic seeing your crazy success. I'm just online stalking you and all of the amazing... well, not actual stalking. and all the amazing things you've been up to. I guess starting off today, I know that we're going to chat a little bit later about how, you know, I kind of came to Australia and that journey in itself. But how did you find your way into the world of theatre? What inspired you to love musical theatre and theatre in general?
Yeah. I was always a musician. Like to think I was a musician. I started writing my first set of lyrics when I was, what, 8? and I look back at those lyrics now and I'm like, oh, no. started writing lyrics at 8. Did my first, like, wrote my first piece of music at, like, I don't know, 13, 14. And then I'm self-taught on the piano, so I just tinkered around till I got around somewhere. And then, you know, would do stage plays at school. Like, I think the first time I stepped on stage was 2. I was 2 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
And I've been doing, yeah, baby.
Your parents were they kind of like involved in that and really, no. Are they theatre people?
No. Just me doing my own thing. I just step on stage and I would audition for the theatre plays every year at school and I would get, if not the supporting, the lead. Sorry, if not the lead supporting, other way around. And very self-centered. great. Your audiences are going to love me.
They will.
Found my way through that. And then when I was much older and I took gap years because of my health, I fell into Greece. I did Greece. And I played Frenchie, and that was when I kind of realized that, oh, this is what I love doing. But I still didn't go into music theater because that is not a viable career in South Asia. No, thank you. yes, so I decided to go study something else, which is also completely unheard of. I went to the US and I went and studied special effects makeup. which is awesome.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a great skill to have, though, yeah. Even though you've just kind of swapped.
Yeah, I just went and studied that and then decided whilst I was there in New York, I decided, oh, you know, I think I need to really think of my future, and special effects wasn't it. So I went back home and I took a gap year and I worked as a special effects artist, and I was quite employable because it is such a niche in Pakistan. And then I took that gap year and then I came to Australia in 2017 and I did my degree.
That's incredible. What a journey you've had.
Oh, there was lots in between that I talk about in Blacklisted.
Oh.
Yes. So, because I guess obviously, so you made the leap to move from Pakistan to Canada and then ended up in Sydney.
No. So I never got to Canada, which is how Blacklisted came about. Yes, oh, Canada has rejected me 6 times.
No!
6 times?
6 times. Mm. Yep.
Wow.
With no real reason. Oh. So yeah, so it is the longest running joke.
Which is, I feel like, surprising. Mm. Because you're like, Canada feels like. Such a welcoming place.
Yes. So I've heard. Apparently not. But it's really funny because, like, my older brother is a citizen there. And it took him 13 years to get his citizenship. But he's a citizen there and I can't get in. So.
Wow. Mm. That How is fun. Crazy.
Fun for me. It's fine. It's cold. It's miserable. No one wants to go to Canada.
My sister lives in Canada. I don't want to go to Canada.
How unfortunate.
And then how did you make that decision then from, you know, you obviously Pakistan to New York and then back to Pakistan, attempted to get to Canada and then ended up in Sydney. How did that happen?
Yeah, so in my time in Pakistan after graduating high school, you know, I was in limbo and stuff. And then I decided to go to Canada because my brother was there and I was just like, cool, keen, you know, and couldn't get in. So I was just like, all right, cool. and so went to America and then didn't really like it there. So went back home and then came here through kind of process of elimination. Not gonna lie. So I was like, okay. Canada wouldn't take me. America didn't like. And then UK was too expensive at the time. So I decided, I was like, hey, parents, I'm going to Australia. It's fun. It has beaches. I'm big beach baby. So I landed up here.
That's incredible.
And there's a lot more. Obviously, you'll hear the entire journey of how I came here in Blacklisted. So it's my journey here.
Yes.
Amazing.
So what it follows.
Well, that was exactly what I was about to ask. Can you tell any more, I guess, about kind of the premise around Blacklisted?
Yeah. So in...
I guess that is the premise around it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I think after the 6th rejection for Canada, I guess it just... Someone was just like... This is a cabaret waiting to happen. And I was like, no. And then in 2020, I was sitting on this idea and there was so much, I think it was slightly after the Rob Guest Endowment Award in 2020. And I was just like, how is this still going on? No. And so I was just kind of like, oh, these are all like themes that I'm facing in Australia. And I hadn't faced them before because obviously in Pakistan, everyone is a person of color. We don't really think about that. We're like, oh, cool. Mm. We're all brown. Yeah. our diversity, our idea of diversity is very different back home. Our diversity... Yeah. Revolves more around class and like the systemic class. Huh? Yeah, that's our diversity.
Wow.
Mm. So when I got here, I was, I guess the rude shock was the people of color and being placed in a box and ethnic roles all your life. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I started writing. I was doing there was a masterclass in cabaret writing with Alexis Fishman. And I pitched the idea there. And she reached out after that session to be like, hi, please write this show. I want to direct it. So it's like, cool.
Wow.
I was like, okay, I guess I'll write. And then I started writing in the title song. Blacklisted was the first song that I wrote. And it was, I think at the time when I wrote it, I was just so angry at the whole situation. And so it's a very, very bluesy number. And it's a very dark minor bluesy number. I love it with all of my heart. And you'll hopefully come see it. And you'll realize how much depth and like weight there is in that song. It takes everything I've got to sing it. Truly, my entire body is in it.
Yeah.
But I love singing that song. I really, really do. I truly do. And so I guess when I wrote that and I was like, great, this is a solid premise of a show, that I keep getting denied visas on the assumption that I hold a Pakistani passport. Obviously, no one's going to come out and say, yes, that is it. Fact. We've done research. I've done research. And I've pulled out the stats. And all the stats are very, very, that's the proof. And that's all the proof I do need. So it exists. Mm-hmm. And at the heart of the show, I guess it was an angsty hate letter to Canada. But, you know, at the end of the day, it became a displacement of home.
Yeah.
You know, and this torn feeling of you leave your home country and you feel guilty and you sort of feel betrayal. And you leave your home country and you make all these sacrifices and then you sit here in a Western country and you question if those sacrifices were worth it. And I guess I still don't know if they were worth it.
Yeah.
That's the hard-hitting question that I'm still grappling with this show. And I guess as the show, because it is autobiographical and it is happening in the here and now, it's still happening, and I don't know where my future's heading. The ending slightly shifts in intention, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big thing, like having a piece that's also about your own life. Mm. Like it's so, when you're putting it out there to an audience, it's like your heart on a plate in front of them.
It is every night. When I did this show last year, every night it would be emotionally draining, right? Because, and yes, I have practices that make me come out of it quicker, and I have self-care after the show that I do, but I have had to create a character within myself to save myself from that, I guess, for lack of a better word, trauma.
It's protecting the self. And I think also, as any writer would know, when you write something that's, even if there's a character loosely based on yourself, you have to find a way to almost entirely separate it yourself from it and be able to go from it from like an acting point of view. And you're like, oh, look at this character that I'm going to, I get to add some of myself to, rather than it being like, no, this is me.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Yeah.
Enjoy going home after the show.
Yeah.
Because like, you don't get to leave because it's your life.
Yeah. And it's very tricky being a method actor for this specific one. All other shows that I've done, I've obviously found myself in the character. But this one, there's really method to it. Yeah. It's really method. And there's just no escaping it. But I'm trying. And people do ask me, so many people came to me after that show and they were like, why would you do that to yourself? And why would you do that to yourself every night? And I'm like, because I have to remember that my story is just one of so many. And I have to remember that the story is important to tell. And obviously I know what I'm putting myself through. And at the end of the day, I remove myself from that and I remember the story and at its forefront what it is. And so I think that's what gets me through it, truly.
No, absolutely. It's so important and it's so, I don't want to say exciting because it's not necessarily it's a double-edged sword. It's a good thing and it's also a really awful thing to see so many more of these stories come to light because we get to see and experience these stories. But then you're also like, why? It is 2023. How?
Yeah.
Why can we not? But it's great that so many different people get to see and hear and hopefully walk away with a bit more understanding of, you know, someone who doesn't look like us, someone that wasn't brought up the same way as us, someone that wasn't necessarily born in Australia, or even if they were born in Australia, you know, there are so many people from so many different walks of life and so many different backgrounds that we don't get to hear or understand their stories. And I guess that in mind, obviously you're also, I feel like it's important to say, one of the headlining shows for Sydney Fringe, just...
Yes.
Very important. Just putting it out there. But what do you hope audiences, how do you hope they walk away after seeing Blacklisted? And what do you want them to, like, suppose, get from seeing the show?
Yeah. Very, very fun question. I want them to walk away being open-minded and receptive. And I guess I want them to engage in the conversation. You know, people will sit in the audience uncomfortably. And that is the nature of the show. And I want them to challenge the system. That's what I want. I want them to be able to say, hey, this is happening. And acknowledge that it is happening. And it is tricky because there are so many people that came up to me after the show last year and tell me, hey, thanks for reminding us in the best way possible of our privilege. And we live in this bubble and we don't realize what it means. And we are so blessed to have this passport. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Mm. And I guess those are the conversations we want to have. We want to have those conversations and we want to, it's not so much of an education. It's just a harsh reality. I guess for myself, it's tricky because I don't want sympathy. This is like, it's out of my control. This is the hand I was dealt and this is the hand I will continue to play. Right? So I don't want sympathy and I just want understanding.
And also, like, even audiences leaving, like, at the end of the day, once they leave the show, having those, you know, in the drive home, having that conversation to be like, wow, I didn't realize this about this, and having those conversations with other people to challenge their own beliefs and almost have those, I know, you know, after a show, sometimes you have those little debates with people in the car and you're like, oh, yeah, that part, you know, those kind of things. Like, that's really good theatre is when you're like, oh, that's challenging my own beliefs and it's completely changed my viewpoint and opened my eyes to so much more that I didn't know was happening in the world and I didn't know existed.
That's it. That's the one.
Yeah. Well, we're actually going to move into a little bit, I don't know, heavy conversation. We're going to shift it away.
That is...
No, it's amazing.
It's still very funny, I promise. I promise the show is very funny, and it ends on a very hopeful note. I don't leave the audience in like a doom and gloom. No, there's a very fun, exciting surprise right at the end. So,
I feel like this is going to be like your recital? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
Your recital. I was like, oh, and we're done. And then it was like
a big queen number. Yeah.
Yes. And I was like, yes.
Something like that.
I'm living.
But we'll jump into a bit of a game now.
Yay!
Yes, we're going to do a rapid fire question round. Woo! So we've got just a couple of rapid fire questions for you.
Great.
To kind of get to know you and also for the audiences to get to know you too.
Great.
So I guess number one, what is your favorite instrument?
That I play or just ever?
I'm thinking... to play and to ever. We can give us both.
Okay, well, I'm better at the piano than I am at the guitar, so I'm going to say piano. Because those are the only two instruments I can play. And ever. Oh, the cello.
Ooh,
the cello.
Cellos are sexy, aren't they? Mm. I always, like, listen to a good cello moment, and I'm like, whoa, that's hot.
Or, like, a tenor sax.
Oh, the sax.
Anybody else watch Wednesday and just be like...
Yes, I did. That scene in Wednesday, I was like, yes.
I was like, I've been wanting to pick up an instrument because I feel like in modern day theatre, there are so many shows where it's like actors that can sing and play instruments. And I was like, what am I going to do? My options were cello or, I can't think of the word now, accordion. And everyone was like, why? And I was like, they look like fun.
That's what I'm going with.
Everyone's like, you know, they're really difficult. And I'm like, yeah, well.
Yep.
That's my choice.
Yeah.
All right. The next question is your go-to karaoke song.
Somebody to Love, Queen.
Mm.
Oh, that's really good.
As you can tell, I've done that so many times because I was very quick to jump onto that one.
But I love that. I love that you just, you know.
Tis my go-to.
I love it. Oh, this is going to be a hard one, but what's your favorite? I'm just curious.
Mm.
What's your favorite musical besides your own?
Okay, one, my musical is not my favorite. Bold of you to assume. favorite musical. I'm going to say Hadestown.
Oh, that's so great.
So good.
Such a good musical.
Oh.
Yeah. I love that they're all just kind of like,
It's just so, and I want it to come to Australia, and I know that it won't, because I know there's not an audience for it here. The theatre kids will love it.
Yeah.
General audience won't.
Probably not.
It's just...
In the same vein then, what is your favourite musical that you've seen recently?
Oh, musical? Not play.
Yeah, I reckon.
What
it could be both, but I'm interested. I've put you on the spot.
You really have. And it look. I'm going to see Murder for Two on Thursday.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks really fun.
It does look really fun. But I'm going to say Lucky Country.
Oh, great choice.
Yeah.
How good was it?
It was very, so very good. Very, very good.
I had so many thoughts that I wrote down after because I was just like...
But in saying that, commercial music theatre, Beauty and the Beast is a gorgeous show. It's a beautiful show.
Beauty and the Beast was really, really wonderful. And it felt like such a fun classic to see. That didn't feel... like I've seen some shows... in recent years that are like, you know, classic music theatre, you know, and they felt like that. They felt dated. This felt fresh and exciting, but it still had that, you know, Broadway, Great Wide Way.
Yes.
Feel.
Nostalgic.
Yes. Not very fun for my epileptic brain, but here we are.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
No. Very flashy.
No.
Very flashy.
I was going to say, I assume you haven't seen Great Comet then.
I did. I did go see Great Comet. I was told where the flashes were, so I was just looking down.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Yeah, I was so curious. With epilepsy, how does it go watching shows or being in a show with all the lights and everything?
Tricky. I think, and I often give theater companies feedback for this, just have a sheet. Just have a running sheet of where your flashes are and just give them to people who are light and sound sensitive. And then Anne Juliet did it. I went to see Anne Juliet. Very, very flashy show as well.
Oh, amazing.
But yeah, they had all of the time signatures and all of the time stamps and where what flashes are where. And so I would just either look down or look away or close my eyes or... Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. That is really good. And it's also really good to know that not everyone does it.
Yeah. Being in shows is trickier. Mm. Luckily, I've been very, very fortunate to have a chat to lighting designers and stuff about where the lights are coming from. They run me through it. They walk me through it. They let me sit out before I actually step on stage.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's good that people understand.
Yeah, although I haven't been in a commercial musical theatre setting to have that chat yet. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how Moulin Rouge would react to that. They'd be like, okay, you can sit this one out. I feel like that's what would happen.
It would be really interesting to see what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean...
I'm interested to see what a conversation like that looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Haven't had to face it yet.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if there is anyone who has epilepsy that's like in any major shows. I'm going to keep asking around. That's interesting.
Or even just light sensitivity.
Yeah, just in general.
Because it's not just epilepsy. Because
I'm trying to think as an autistic, as someone with the tism, that shows often, probably to nowhere near the same extent, but shows often I'm just like,
Yeah.
There's so much happening.
Yeah, people with brain injuries and people with light sensitivity, it is tricky. Because everyone's different. So it's not a cookie cutter. Here's the thing.
No. It's as if the whole world is not cookie cutter. And the industry shouldn't be treated that way either.
No.
Funnily enough.
No, it should not. But that's a longer chat.
Anyway, moving along. The final question for the rapid fire questions.
Yes. Let's go.
I know. I'm like, we'll go on tangents for days. Yeah. And I love it. I actually wanted to talk to you about that, so that's great.
Yeah. Great.
Your TV show recommendation.
I don't watch a lot of TV. But.
No way.
I don't have time.
Fair enough, actually.
I don't have time. So anytime
I'll just have like one thing going, you know?
Yeah. I'll be basic and say Stranger Things. I can't wait for the final season to come out.
Oh, good choice.
I don't like talking about the fact that it's the final season.
Yeah, sorry.
Last season made me sad.
It really did. Season 4 was action-packed. Yeah.
It was very emotional.
It was. And I watched it whilst I was on vacation.
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh. No.
It's fine. I was by the beach, so I just went and like...
You were like, wow, dark, dreary America. Now to the beach.
Beach. And to immerse myself in water.
Yes.
Yeah. I love it. I guess also being a top-tier performer, you're also a composer. How would you describe your composing style and what vibe can we expect from your show?
Top tier performer. Casting directors, did you hear that? Please cast me.
Stage Door Podcast. Almitra is a top tier performer, also composer extraordinaire.
Oh, bless. Yeah, look, when I actually came to AIM, right? I'm not I'm not a music theater nerd. Okay, I'm not. I'm going to say this out loud, out proud. I come from a very contemporary background. I grew up listening to Queen and the Eagles and, you know, Kenny Rogers and Lionel Richie and Dolly Parton, you know? I grew up with contemporary music. And so, and obviously Eastern classical, I was immersed in that world. So a lot of my influences come from that. So Blacklisted, it's very genre bleeding. So there's there's blues, there's a bit of rock, there's music theater, there's a beautiful ballad in there. There's two songs in language, which is Urdu, which is like the national language of Pakistan. And yeah, there's a rap in there.
Yes.
Tori, your face.
I saw you do it at Tough Titties. I don't know if it's the same one or not, but
it's not. It's not the same one.
I'm still excited.
Yeah, it's a different one, but yeah, it's very, very, it's very fun. It's called Immigrants. So, come see it.
I love it.
Packs a punch.
I'm so excited, and I guess in the similar vein. So obviously, we've noticed that you have, and I'm going to attempt to say it, a tabla.
Tabla. Yep.
And a sitar as part of your band. Can you give us a bit more information on these instruments and your choice behind using them for your show?
Yeah, absolutely. So because my show sits in that world, right? It sits in between that East and Western fusion, because I want to incorporate my identity and my culture into the Western fusion, it was very, very important for me that those two instruments, if not the tabla, at least the sitar is there. It's a visual treat to have that instrument on stage, but just the sound it makes, it is not, you cannot replicate that. You just can't. You can't replicate that sound, and you cannot track that sound. People are like, oh, you can find a guitar pedal that makes a sitar sound. And I'm like, no, no, don't do it.
Live is so much better.
It's just, it's a very, very succinct, unique sound, that instrument, right? And so I really fought. I fought for that instrument. I'm like, nope, I will not compromise. That instrument will be on stage with me. And fun fact about the sitar, it can't change keys within a song.
Oh, because you have to physically change it, is that right? Yeah.
It has to be tuned to a certain key, so all my key changes are null and void with that instrument.
Did you have to rewrite?
No, they just, in our musical development, we decided of the part of the song that they do come in on, and so it's either the end of the song or, you know, there's bits and pieces that you drop in and out of.
That's so interesting. So they have to retune between each song, or?
Yep.
Oh my god, wow.
Yeah, so yeah, which is always fun.
They're busy.
Them. Yeah, they're like, okay.
Chaotic.
In my other production, so this is it's a reimagined production of Blacklisted. In this version, I didn't have the tabla before, and I do have one now. And the tabla is also gonna do my MDing stuff, because we have tracked the piano and cello for some of them. Budget. Budget. It all came down to budget.
Yes.
And trying to make this show tourable. Those are the two instruments that when you come see the show, they will feel like home. And that's what I want. It's a homely homely environment. And it's a very intimate space, right? It's basically having a chat in my living room is what the vibe is and what the ambiance is.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to recreate that with those two instruments. And I talk about what my music means to me when I'm at home and how it's just, you know, sitting on a rooftop with cushions and a guitar. And that's the vibe.
I love that.
When you come to Blacklisted, yeah, where we have floor seating, we have rug seating, and you are basically on stage with me.
Yes.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah. And you may or may not be receiving some goodies.
There's goodie bags? No.
No. No, no. No, not quite. But not quite. Not quite the vibe.
You're like, no, no, cut that out. That's not what I meant. No, please. No,
that's not what I meant.
Stop.
Yeah.
Well, I guess to kind of, in a way, close out the formal part of the interview for today, in three words, tell our listeners why they should come and see Blacklisted.
I'm going to say belonging, identity, and home.
Oh, that's beautiful. Mm. Oh,
yeah.
This has been so fantastic chatting to you. I'm really devastated that I'm in Brisbane right now and I cannot see the show, but Tori will be going, which is super, super exciting. I will be getting my notes. Yes. Like the lucky country. I get all my little notes.
Lovely. I'm saying if you're closer to Adelaide, come there. Are you? I don't know.
Oh, I'm nowhere near Adelaide. I'm in Brizzy now.
Okay. Well, Melbourne? Yeah.
Melbourne? Or Melbourne. I'm moving to Melbourne in November.
Oh, cool. Melbourne next year.
Fantastic.
Melbourne 2024.
I'll be there.
Great.
Love it. We're putting it out there.
Yes, we are.
Melbourne 2024.
Yes, we are. Melbourne 2024.
I love it.
Yay.
Well, I guess before we go, we have a little thing on our podcast called A Bedtime Story.
Yes.
Which is some sort of stage mishap or anything that has gone wrong for you in a show. Can you share with us your stage mishaps?
Yeah. Look, it actually happened in the last run of Blacklisted. I do a gag where I sing this very beautiful, like, belty last note, and then I drink my cup of tea. And whilst drinking that cup of tea, I choked on it. And fully choked on it and like was having a coughing fit, and the audience was having a lovely laugh because they thought it was part of the show. It really wasn't. But yeah.
Oh my God.
And whilst coughing, my mic pack fell off. So yeah.
Oh no.
A double whammy.
Double whammy. And so then I just kind of went to my MD and I was like, Tim, put it back on. Please.
Help. Help me.
I can relate so much. I recently did a show and I was about to go on and I had a bit of like, I was like, you know, I'll take a little sip of the drink. Like, I'm literally moments from going on. Take a sip of the drink. Absolutely start coughing and crying. And like, I am going on. There's no piano behind me. It's a cappella. And I'm like crying and I'm about to sing. And I'm like, and I was looking to luckily the cover that for that song was next. And she was about to open the curtain for me to go out. And I was like, you might need to go back out. I can't do this. So I relate hardcore to that because it is the worst when you're having a coughing fit and you have to sing. It's literally
the worst. Truly the worst.
Do not drink before you sing.
Nope. But it's just an hour of me singing, so I really need to hydrate during the show.
Yeah.
1 hour.
That was an unfortunate time then.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, the audience had a good laugh, so I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
They were just like, wow, really method acting, really committing to the bit.
Really committing.
Like, someone please, I'm actually dying.
This is part of the show, yes.
That's always my favourite thing.
I survived.
That's too good.
Well, before we go for today, and thank you so much for sharing your bedtime story and for taking the time to come and chat to us tonight. Obviously, we're here to talk about Blacklisted, so please plug Blacklisted. Tell us the dates. Where can we find tickets? What's the venue? Give us all the details.
Lovely. So Blacklisted is playing at the Pact Theatre in Erskineville, 5th to the 9th of September. Showtimes vary. They're a rotating roster, so showtimes do vary. There's two shows at 9, two shows at 7:30, and there's one Saturday show at 6 p.m. Tickets are on the Sydney Fringe website. Just type Blacklisted and you should be able to book tickets.
That is fantastic. Oh, and you guys better get tickets because this is gonna pop off.
Run, get tickets. Also, please buy tickets soon. Yes. So my producer brain is not stressing at the last minute. Please and thank you. But yes,
Almitra needs to eat food.
Yes, I do. But I guess my message to the people who are coming is I just hope that you find something in the show to relate to. You know, it can be identity, it can be love, family, career. You know, there's so much in it. Yeah. Come have chai with me.
Absolutely, we cannot wait to see Blacklisted and to see where it will go after Sydney Fringe. But thank you so much again, Mitra, for coming on and having a chat to us today. It has been absolutely wonderful.
Thanks, Tori. Thanks, Liza. Thank you for having me. It's really nice to share this story and to find people who are willing to engage in this conversation. So thank you.
Anytime. Oh my gosh, I have so much time in the world for you, Almitra.
Thank you, everyone, so much for being here. And until next time, stay happy, healthy, and safe, and we will see you then. Bye! Bye.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.